This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana, Xiaoning and Philip. We're continuing our review of different elements of the 12th Malaysia Plan, and we're looking today at environmental sustainability. Under the first rolling plan of the 12th Malaysia Plan for Environmental Sustainability, 2.9 billion ringgit has been allocated with the goal of making green economic growth a priority. So some commitments under this plan are to be a carbon neutral country by 2050 at the earliest, and to reduce Malaysia's greenhouse gas emissions intensity of GDP by 45% in 2030.
Now, to support this, a comprehensive national energy policy, a carbon tax and a carbon pricing will be introduced. So currently, Malaysia has reduced the greenhouse gas emissions intensity of GDP by around 29%. But another pressing problem is that Malaysians generate around 1.17 kilograms of waste per capita per day, which is 60% higher than the global average. So can Malaysia go green whilst also achieving its ambitious economic goals of the 12th Malaysia Plan?
So for some thoughts on what we can do, we speak to Alizan Mahadi, Senior Director of Research at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, or ISIS Malaysia. Alizan, thanks for speaking to us today. Always a pleasure to have you. What's your reaction to the 12th Malaysia Plan? Does it reflect serious commitment by the government towards environmental sustainability in line with the sense of urgency that's been communicated by the international community under the latest IPCC report?
Hey, good morning and thanks for having me. Okay, first of all, from an aspirational point of view, the scope of sustainability is certainly more prominent than in previous years. We have the focus on advancing sustainability, and this is one of three major themes compared to previous years. Sustainability would be a much less major part of the Malaysia plans, with the 11th plan having one chapter or focus out of 10 pillars, and the 10th Malaysia plan having sustainability subsumed under one of the strategies to address quality of life. So it's certainly more prominent in that sense. But the real game-changing element is not only that it is a standalone chapter, standalone focus, but the fact it is mainstreamed in other sections of the 12th plan, especially with the focus of green growth. So this is one of the major challenges of environmental sustainability generally, where previously there were conflicting objectives that were, for example, while we had aspirations to move towards a low-carbon economy, climate resilience, at the same time, we were intent on increasing coal-fired plants, automobile ownership, and so on. So in the 12th plan, you can see green growth really being mainstreamed in other chapters and strategies, including at the macroeconomic level, where there's a focus towards restoring growth. There's a focus on green growth, such as scaling up green practices, green industry, on eco-industrial parks, and so on. Under tourism, there's a focus on enhancing sustainability, and under cities and urban development, there's a strong focus and strategies on green mobility, urban biodiversity, and so on. So in this sense, it is much more coherent and mainstream across the plan. But your question from a commitment point of view, firstly, we will have to wait and see whether this translates to implementation. And another way we can review this commitment is, as you mentioned, looking at allocation of resources. So as you highlighted, it was announced a total of 2.92 billion has been allocated under the first rolling plan. And this is actually the same amount of development expenditure in 2021. Nonetheless, this is why it is very important for environmental sustainability to be mainstream, as there will likely be budget allocation under other ministries and sectors. And it'd be worthwhile to have a look into detail and to tag these budgets to understand the bigger picture, whether environmental expenditure as a whole has increased.
Alizan, at the same time, though, we are having some very ambitious targets. For example, GDP growth of 4.5% to 5.5%. And there is reference made to major infrastructure projects. So do you think this conflicting objectives still exist, though? I mean, because you've got this goal for sustainability, but on the other hand, you have development goals?
Yeah, as I highlighted, on the one hand, there is a higher degree of coherence in mainstreaming, but on the other hand, we still do have these mega projects. And in short, there are ways that these large mega projects can be more sustainable if done properly. But again, it remains to be seen whether that is the case. For example, when we look at other projects such as the European Recovery and European Green Deal, there is a principle which is called a do no harm principle, for meaning that for every strategy that the European Union adopts, it will ensure that it does not conflict with environmental or social objectives for that matter. So we haven't seen that in particular for the 12th ban, but we have seen the intent for it to be more coherent. But again, as you highlighted, even in our reporting to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, our latest report does show that emissions have increased and our carbon sinks have decreased as well. And this is at least in part, according to the report, due to the development of major infrastructure projects due to land use change and so on. So again, it all depends on how these projects are executed, are implemented. There are ways to make it more sustainable, but certainly these conflicting objectives still exist. And the execution is where we will see whether we can balance the two goals of economic growth and environmental goals.
Maybe, Alison, it's time to apply a carbon tax then, or even put price to carbon so that we change the incentive structure away from all these carbon emitting projects, no?
Well, yes. At the moment, what we are missing is such a broad-based instrument that addresses and corrects the market failures of carbon emissions. So, first of all, in the 12th measure plan, this was mentioned, carbon pricing, carbon tax, but it was mentioned more in the context of understanding its feasibility rather than talking about its implementation. But as you highlighted, we first need to have a basis of this carbon pricing based on science. And what I mean by that is, crudely speaking, when we talk about carbon pricing and carbon tax, we need to know what are the external costs of carbon. For example, we know that climate change causes disasters such as floods, droughts, healthcare costs, but a lot of the damages and loss by climate change is being borne by the government or by the general public. So yes, it would be very effective to put a price and put a tax on carbon. Nonetheless, of course, this will cause challenges in terms of its feasibility of implementation. Any tax being proposed is often an unpopular move politically. Nonetheless, it has been seen to be the most optimal solution in terms of correcting the market failures of climate change globally.
And Alison, can I ask if you think that the 12th Malaysia Plan has omitted anything important? I mean, were there elements that were that disappointed you that you felt should have been in the plan?
Well, let me touch on one of the headline topics that you highlighted as well, which is achieving carbon neutral status by as early as 2050. I like to make it clear that the target is by as early as 2050, because I think there's been many reports saying that is a target in Malaysia, that we have an ambitious target for to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050, but that's not entirely correct. We have not put a date to it. It is by as early as 2050. So therefore, I wouldn't say disappointed. The timeline we want to achieve it has to be based on evidence, have to be based on science. But moving forward, that is one area that we do have to set the target clearly, what year we can achieve carbon neutrality, because as early as 2050 does not really, it's not a target.
It's still 30 years away. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's still 30 years away, and it's not a target anyway. It's not a target of timeline. But some other things that perhaps could have been included is more the, I would say, process-based targets. A few things that have been left out. For example, in the previous plan, there was a target of having an explicit new legislation on environmental protection. And that was not achieved, and that has been left out as well this year. Also, there was no mention of, for example, again, broad-based instruments, broad-based intervention. There's no mention of rationalizing subsidies from fossil fuels, and this should go in line with suggestions such as carbon tax to look at the overall ecosystems. So generally speaking, at the instrument level, at the implementation level, there's still not many targets that provides processes, instruments to really affect implementation, though the 12th measure plan does allow the basis for it. So again, it's a matter of we will wait and see whether these instruments will be implemented during the next 5 years.
All right, Alizan, thank you so much for your comments. That was Alizan Mahadi, Senior Director of Research at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, or ISIS Malaysia, talking to us about just how ambitious the 12th Malaysia Plan is with regard to environmental sustainability. And the initial impressions are quite mixed.
I think they have a long way to go. I mean, look at our energy mix for electricity supply in Malaysia. 88% is non-renewable, 47% is coal, 41% is natural gas. We have so much more to do, right, to get to that level. And if you compare to China, where they're having an energy crisis, only 67% is non-renewable. So yeah. It goes to show that we have so much more, even though China is already having a crisis.
Now, I'm just looking at things in a very simple level. And my issue is that you've got this big policy, but on the other hand, you have issues like Taman Rimba Kiara, Kuala Langat North Forest Reserves. That's environment. Why aren't we thinking about it?
There's dissonance, yeah, right, between your messages. You're saying one thing but doing another. And as Alizan says, we have to keep watching this to see whether it'll actually be implemented effectively. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.